international viewers, bear with me, because although you will not recognize some of the names I'm about to talk about, you will recognize the theme. You will recognize the moral degeneracy that was erupting in Britain yesterday with the televised arrest of an alleged sex offender who turned up at a venue to have sex in a threesome with what he thought was a 15-year-old schoolboy. He was caught by a vigilante group. You may not like vigilantes. I think they have done the country and the society a favor by demonstrating just how revoltingly degenerate, even on a personal level, the Labour Party has become. Now, the rabbit trapped in the headlights, staring at the camera, bumbling his words, was once a very powerful man indeed in British government. I first met him when I was clashing with him on an almost daily basis when he was one of Tony Blair's war ministers during the invasion and occupation of Iraq, which killed a million people and destroyed the lives of millions of others. But when he left the war ministry, he didn't go quiet. He didn't stop destroying other people's lives. And it is now alleged that he was ready to destroy a child's life, even though that child turned out to be a hairy-arsed vigilante who had entrapped him. He knew, all right, that the boy was a schoolboy because the boy told him multiple times that he was a schoolboy. But that didn't stop Ivar Kaplan, former defence minister, with his finger on the trigger, wanted to get his finger on a schoolboy and share him at that with his partner, who he names as Stephen. Maybe there will be more to come on that. Now, that's not all you need to know about Ivar Kaplan. You need to know that he's not a Pakistani. He's not even a Muslim. As a matter of fact, he's Jewish, and he is a rabid supporter of Benjamin Netanyahu. And his Israel, by the way, is turning out to be quite a playground for that type of person that Ivar Kaplan seems to be. The head of the so-called Jewish, so-called Labour movement, Ivar Kaplan, was the head of an organization which, to join, you neither had to be Jewish nor did you have to be Labour. And why is this important? Because the man trapped by the vigilantes today played a leading role in the destruction of Jeremy Corbyn and his project as the former leader of the Labour Party. Mr. Corbyn's far too nice to say the things that I am now saying and am about to say. He hunted Corbyn in a witch hunt from a moral high ground when his feet were in a cesspit of filth, obscenity, degeneracy. That probably sounds familiar to you in your country too, because it is now an axiom, I mean an axiom, that the more rabidly pro-Israel Zionist you are, the more likely you are to be a corrupt and repulsive individual. You have to be repulsive to be completely unmoved at the mass murder of children on a daily basis, for sure. Almost 100 children have been murdered this year, and it's only the 12th of January. But the moral, repugnant, revolting degeneracy displayed in the personal lives and the business lives of the biggest supporters of Israel is now legion. I don't have time to adumbrate the wickedness of these people. And as a believer in right and wrong myself, I have to believe that it is not a coincidence that the biggest supporters of Zionism in the Western world are almost always, with one or two exceptions, are almost always the most repugnant individuals. And that certainly covers Ivor Kaplan. He was one of the main authors of the so-called anti-Semitism, fake, hoax, anti-Semitism allegations that hunted Jeremy Corbyn to his political grave. And that's important, whether you like Jeremy Corbyn or not, because it was the destruction of the Corbyn Labour Party that led to Boris Johnson, with global implications. More than a million people have died in Ukraine. Boris Johnson played a central role in that. He would never have been the prime minister if people like Ivor Kaplan, former MP, former defense minister in Tony Blair's so-called Labour government, if Corbyn had survived the assault, and he made many mistakes in the ways that he tried to deal with it, mainly by throwing his friends under the bus, feeding them to the crocodiles, in the hope that the crocodiles would eat him last. But that's a story for another day. Kaplan and co. in the Zionist industry that is central to the political life in this country now and the media life in this country now. Want to know how I know that? This Kaplan story I'm telling you now has hardly had a breath of publicity after weeks in which Pakistanis and Muslims whose names nobody knew were plastered on the front of every newspaper. But a man at the center of Tony Blair's Labour government is caught out in the way he was caught out. It can't even get on the news. That's how I know that this cult of Israel has become the dominant cult in political life in Western countries. And that is an issue, a story, a narrative that is as true in the United States, where many of you are watching now, as it is true in Britain, as it is true in Germany, as it is true in France and other European countries. Nobody else will tell you, even if they ever report this case, that Kaplan was Jewish, that Kaplan was a leading Zionist figure. None of them will tell you that, though the mere hint of a dusky hue in many aspects of the criminal law in Britain gets you labelled, stamped on your forehead. You're a Muslim, you're a Pakistani, you're predisposed to sin, when, of course, the entire opposite is true. If you do the things that these groomers and paedophiles are doing in a Muslim society, you'll be shot in the head if you are lucky. Your head will be severed from your shoulders if you are unlucky. So I've been down the rabbit hole over the last hours. And what do I discover? That this Ivor Kaplan is in pictures with the who's who of the British establishment, who continue, in many cases, still to follow him on Twitter. King Charles is pictured with him. Maybe that's not quite the surprise that it would once have been about a British monarch. As I joked today, at this critical juncture, King Charles might want to consult Sir Keir Starmer, his prime minister, the man who failed to prosecute Sir Jimmy Savile. Or he could consult the Archbishop of Canterbury. Oh, wait, the Archbishop of Canterbury has had to resign in a child sex scandal. Or he could consult the Duke of York, his own brother. Oh, wait, the Duke of York cannot show his face in public because of his involvement in the Jeffrey Epstein affair. Or he could consult his own ambassador, already packing his Gucci loafers for Washington, Baron Mandelson, Keir Starmer's newly appointed British ambassador in Washington. And believe me, I could go on. 52 Labour councillors that we know of, 52 of them in the last couple of years, few years, have been convicted of the most wicked, foul, depraved, degenerate behaviour, often involving children when not involving animals, and I'm not making that up. But this goes to, I think, a deeper issue, and one which is common across the Western world. Our entire societies are now in a helter-skelter downwards towards the pits of degeneracy. And how did that happen? Why was it allowed to happen? Why did nobody stop it happening? If you look at the standards of monarchs, of presidents, of prime ministers, and kings, and parliamentarians, and senators, and congress members, if you look at the mayors, if you look even at the judges in many Western countries, their reputations are scarred out of all recognition by corruption and wickedness. How did that happen? Well, it started when we decided that anything goes. That there's no God, there's no religion, there's no right and wrong, there's no morality and immorality. You can do whatever you like, to whomsoever you like, wherever you like. You can go on a naked bike ride through the center of London and wave your putrescent, semi-erect penis at the passers-by. You can go on a parade on the back of a truck on a float. You can dress in women's underwear and cavort as lewdly as you like in public, in front of children and old ladies, frightening the horses. When we decided not only that you could do these things, but that the public would be shanghaied into paying for these things, the taxpayer would be charged with the cost of these kind of things, these transvestites going into children's libraries and putting on burlesque performances and so on. It started when we decided that a woman could have a penis, that a man could have a cervix, that a man could go into a girl's toilet or changing room, that a man could say he was a woman and that the rest of us had to treat him as if that were true. This spiral downwards is what I am talking about. Now, please believe me, I am not remotely a prude. I believe that anyone can do anything that they want in their private lives, but not in public. And don't ask me to celebrate it. Whatever it is that turns you on, good luck to you. I mean that. Good luck to you. As long as it's legal, and as long as you don't try, if you'll forgive the phrase, to ram it down my throat. And in particular, expose children to premature sexualization and exploitation, like it is alleged that Ivor Kaplan was captured doing just yesterday. Now, I believe in God. You already know that. Most of you maybe don't. But don't you see something divine in the turning of Hollywood into Gaza? Can't you, with all sympathy to those people who've lost their lives and their property, can't you see the irony in that? That Biden and the Democrats turned Gaza into a Holocaust, and then a Holocaust struck the very heart of American soft power, burning out some of the biggest supporters of the Hiroshimaization of the poor Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip, for whom no one is shedding a tear amongst the powerful and the wealthy and the engaged in Western countries. Nobody knows how many kids were killed today in Gaza amongst that milieu. And nobody even cares. They don't know because they don't care. Because other people's lives, other people's homes, other people's families are irrelevant to you. Well, perhaps, God decided to show the people of the United States exactly what's been happening in the burning tents in Gaza. The important difference is that, so far as I know, all the hospitals in the Los Angeles area are intact and in working order. No one will murder the ambulance man or the fireman as he speeds towards your address to try and rescue you. You will receive succor and comfort, not from the insurance companies that you were paying all these years. They have helpfully opted out. But you will receive the sympathy of the mass media, of the very television stations that have completely ignored similar fires, similar infernos, actually paid for by the United States taxpayer themselves. Netanyahu's a criminal, but Joe Biden is a bigger criminal, because Netanyahu's crimes could not have been committed but for the never-ending largesse of the Democratic Party of the United States of America. And guess what? They don't just run for another couple of days at least, the White House and the Hill. They run California too, a California which ran out of water in their fire hydrants, whose firefighters, men and women, gallant men and women, could not fight the fires Because there was no water. Why is there no water? Well, it turns out that another morally repugnant supporter of Israel and Netanyahu, a funder of illegal settlements in Palestine, a man and wife team, the Resniks, they own all the water in the state of California, and they have refused to invest in making sure that the abundant Pacific Ocean could be desalinated and filled into the reservoirs. They have refused to do anything about the water scarcity in the state of California. Why? Because it's more profitable for them for there to be a shortage of water in California, because a lack of supply means a big rise in demand, and a big rise in demand of something in short supply. Well, listen to the shekels rustling, if you will. I'll be talking to two fine Americans in just a minute. You do, I promise you, you do want to stick around to hear them. Stay tuned.